This is The Guardian.
I should say before we start, today's episode contains some swearing. I'm Grace Dent, and this is Comfort Eating from The Guardian. A podcast where we pay homage to the lesser celebrated foods in life. Because even as a restaurant critic, I believe the food that matters most is often that snack you cobble together when you're curled upon the sofa. Each week, I ask my guest to lift the lid on what comfort foods have seen them through their lives. Because you can tell a lot about a person from what they eat behind closed doors.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello, friends. It is that time of the week again. Just trying to herd the cats upstairs whilst at the same time rummaging around my kitchen for a bite to eat before today's guest arrives. Shall I leave Missy on the couch? Is she gonna cry right through this interview? Can she be trusted? No, she can't. More importantly, just having a snack that I think confirms my standing as a culinary genius. Digestive biscuits smothered in Nutella with some fresh raspberries on top. I am so looking forward to meeting today's guest. It is the actor and the real life Derry girl, Saoirse Monica Jackson. Since 2018, Saoirse has been a regular on our telly screens in Channel 4's beloved comedy, Derry Girls. Playing Erin Quinn, Saoirse has been part of the gang that we all want to be in, not least because of the endless dib-dabs, swizzle lollies and tempeh mixes that flow through their pockets. For those who've not seen it, it's not just all about 90s nostalgia, though. Although, my God, the music, the outfits, it is all great. The show's creator, Lisa McGee, has also been praised for teaching everyone outside of Ireland a thing or two about the Good Friday Agreement. The show has undoubtedly changed Saoirse's life and career, but I want to know more about how she got here. From Derry to the West End and now to Hollywood, I can't wait to also hear what food has sustained her on this journey. And I know one thing, Kat, you're not staying for it. Go on, avail yourself of the garden. Off you go. Just keep walking. Saoirse Monica Jackson, welcome to Comfort Eating.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Grace.
Right, a little birdie tells me that we have something in common, right? You have been learning to drive recently.
Yes.
Did you do an intensive?
No, I'm not doing an intensive. Well, I was originally calling it a crash course and then I was obviously corrected. But I'm not doing an intensive course, but I'm just doing it intensively. So I'm just going out every day and trying to do it at the moment. But I'm really enjoying it. And shocker, I'm impressed with myself again. I think I'm really good at it.
What's the bit that fills you with dread?
Checking the mirrors. I just don't really bother checking the mirrors. I'm not really into the mirrors. I'm back onto the steering wheel and I'm back onto the gas. And I really love the gears, but the mirrors aren't really for me. Are you learning to drive as well?
I've learned to drive many times. Still haven't got my test. And with me, for example, when I'm going to a roundabout, I don't know where I'm meant to be on the roundabout. So what I do is I just go into all of the lanes. Like, you know, just kind of like going backwards and forwards.
And swerve about.
I am dying to know what comfort snack we are going to be eating together today. What, you're hiding something. I have no idea what this is. Please bring me your snack.
Bring me your snack.
Bring me your snack.
It's very fancy with the wee lids, isn't it?
Wow, hang on. Sorry. Right, I've unveiled the snack. This looks like a proper dinner. Give us a fork. Right, so what we have is spaghetti.
This is what I call my comfort Tabasco pasta. So it's just spaghetti.
It's quite creamy.
It's red pesto, natural yogurt.
Yeah.
Basically a full block of feta, tomatoes, frozen peas, and loads and loads and loads of Tabasco.
So that is feta and Tabasco that's making the sauce and then a bit of yogurt in it.
Delicious. My favourite. I'm so glad you like it. Sorry for talking with my mouth full.
That's like a properly delicious, non-disgusting snack. You've broken comfort eating. Right, give me an example when you might eat this.
So yeah, when I'm really hungover, this is like a good go-to dish because I think the Tabasco sort of blows a hangover out of you.
Yes.
Or if I'm sad, or if I'm traveling, or if it's cold outside with a nice bottle of red wine. It's just a go-to all-round gal's best friend, I think.
Oh, I'm just eating all the time you're talking. I love it.
I know, so I have sort of cheated, which is so naughty.
It's a meal for all seasons.
It really is. I think when I first started making it, and I was like 18 or 19, I was at this point like really obsessed with dried herbs. You know, when you're like first learning how to cook and you put on like half a fucking tub of oregano. It's lovely.
Just like they eat on the continent.
I like to coat the whole thing with oregano. So I was doing that for a stage. So I've just got better at it along the way. And obviously now, like if I see like a yummy mummy, like granola mom pesto, I'll buy that for myself. Instead of the Tesco's own. Yeah. Who knows?
You are a real life Derry girl.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up with your parents, Sean and Ruth.
Yeah.
Two younger brothers. Your mum was a chef. But what was your dad's approach to food?
It was absolutely awful. But he was very... Some of the things that he did... He had mastered really well. Like, no one's potato salad is like my dad's potato salad because he just puts all the worst things in it.
Yeah.
And he makes lasagna, but he says he intentionally doesn't cook it properly. So the middle sheet of pasta is completely virtually uncooked.
Crunchy,
but it's like chewy. It's at that level. And that's actually my favourite way to have lasagna now is my dad's uncooked lasagna.
So when he was in charge of you, when you were a kid, what kind of stuff did you get? A lot of cereal?
Smash. Smash. Really bad, though. I hated smash. But he used to make corned beef hash, which I love. I know that's a real British thing, isn't it? Corned beef hash. I used to go nuts for that. But when my mum would go away, it would just be very badly organised. And we were all like a year apart from each other. So he would tell... He was born in South Africa, my dad, and he would... When he ran out of milk, he would use Dilute. We call it Dilute. He's called squash or cordial with their cereal. And he would tell them that that's how he fought tigers and rhinos was eating cereals with Dilute. So my two brothers would love this. And I would obviously be like, he's lying. He just forgot.
I love this man.
And they ate it up. They loved it. Sugar sandwiches, all the things. And like, obviously, my mum would not have wanted us to have.
Was it exciting when he was in charge?
No, I hated it. That's so nice if he listens to this. No, it was nice to have that time with him, and he would obviously do fun stuff for us, but I was so organised and just such a wee stew when I was younger and a wee square that, like, I couldn't stand when my dad was in charge because I hated the dinners and the house was a mess and we were late for school and I couldn't handle the stress of it.
It's a chaos.
Yeah, chaos!
You don't like the chaos.
No!
So your mother, on the other hand, is this really good cook? Is that what she's known for amongst the family? And
she really is. She used to be a professional chef and, yeah, the whole family would love my mum's cooking. Aww. We all share Christmas Day now, but for years my mum did it for my whole family, all my aunties and uncles and my cousins, and she's just brilliant.
Yeah.
She's really great at putting on a big spread and entertaining people. She always used to do a Halloween dinner party, which I used to love. Everybody in Derry goes for the full shebang for Halloween. We love it. Yeah. We just make any small little event and do a massive day. But she would do a Halloween dinner party and I used to love that. And she'd dress up as the mum from the Addams Family and I used to think it was so cool.
If she was having one of her dinner parties, did you help?
I would help get the house ready and I used to love that sort of atmosphere with all the candles on and music playing. And I used to love the sound of people downstairs when I was upstairs in my bedroom as a kid. I used to love it. And I used to love that prep sort of for the 2 days before and that morning off with her doing everything. But I'm a really bad picker. Like, I love to pick and my mum hates that. It drives her bananas. I think from being a chef, she can't stand people picking and eating in the kitchen.
How are you and your brothers at sharing all this lovely food?
I'm fine, but my youngest brother is like the greediest person you'll ever meet. And he has remained to stay very greedy. There's this infamous story that my friend still remembers when she came round to play with me when he was about 4. He was like, you always invite your friends round to eat all their biscuits. And like, it was always party rings were a main fight. Party rings were like a physical fight would erupt over party rings. So they then got banned.
It's mad how when you look back, when you think how you used to physically fight your own brothers. There was fights in your house over party rings.
Mm-hmm.
Which colour?
Purple. The lilac one every time. Set it on your tongue and let it dissolve. Talk goes a bit soggy and you can just swallow the basket whole.
So your brother, you and your brothers are committing physical violence over party rings. Mm. What's your mother doing? How does she manage it all?
I think because we were all a year apart in age and we fought that much, she just completely ignored it.
I do remember banging my brother's head off a radiator once, and I think it was a fight over the Argos catalogue. And again, I do think that your mother just zones out.
Yeah. My mum was very healthy and very health conscious. And yeah, she was great at hiding things. She would remove the bottom drawer of a set of drawers and put biscuits underneath. Do you know what I mean? Like, and the sort of lining of the set of drawers. Mental.
So if I'd met you when you were 6, who would I have met? Were you a performer by that point?
Yeah, I think I came out all singing and dancing. My mum had sort of probably instilled a lot of that in me. She told me, if you're an actress, that you get to keep the clothes, which obviously now I know is a lie.
That's not true.
And then when I used to watch EastEnders with her and they would eat crisps and stuff at work, I'd be like, geez, that's a great job. Yes. And I loved, obviously, to perform. I wanted to be an actor and a pop star and have my own ice cream van. So one out of three is not too bad, isn't it?
I'm going to ask questions about the other thing. I've got to go to the ice cream van because the idea of driving around all day, serving 99, Mr. Whippies.
Yep.
And just talking to people. I loved the idea of that when I was little. It's like delivering joy, isn't it?
Exactly. And you have a theme tune. You have your own personal theme tune. And I just love the idea of me also driving the ice cream van day to day. Pick up my friends, go shopping in the ice cream van.
What would your theme tune be?
Dido White Flag.
It's that Dido White Flag. People would just hear it kind of coming sadly down the street.
Yeah.
And they'd go, yeah, I want an ice pop.
they're either salivating or really fucking creeped out.
Oh, cry.
Which I sort of like. I like that sort of like borderline. Let's make people feel everything. And here I am.
When you were 10, your mum and your dad ran a small hotel mm-hmm. in Donegal. What was that like?
It's sort of mad because when I look back on it, it's like this brief experience, but it was so nice. It was so joyous. It was such a lovely time, I think, in all of our childhoods. Mm-hmm. It's on this beautiful setting. It's actually changed now, but the building was obviously very, very old and it was right beside this old castle ruins. So that I loved that first and foremost because mm-hmm. I was obviously convinced myself that it was haunted and used to make up lies and tell people all these ghost stories that just I had made up to the customers as well that were staying there. Uh-huh. But it was lovely. My mum and dad would get big show bands for the summer and they would play outside on the water and they were just like the campest, funnest bands in the world. My child's memory seeing them as like 15 people. Now, if I could go to it, there was actually only like 6 of them. But in my head, there was like 10 of them, do you know? And they were a family called the John Quigley Show Band. And they just had the most amazing costumes. And Carol, who's the sister, she had kids the same age as me that I would play with when they were performing. She would come out of the honeymoon suite and come down onto the stage, like climb down on the stage and do these bits are made for walking.
Oh my God.
And of course, as a young child that wanted to perform, she was just like the absolute fucking bee's knees to me.
Yes.
The bee's knees. And I remember going on holidays and like playing with these girls in the pool and they were like, what's your favourite band? And all the rest of the years were like Red Hot Chili Peppers or Blink 182. And I was like, the John Quigley Show Band.
Other than amazing show bands coming along, what is the best perk of having parents that run a hotel?
The pastry chef. That was great. And she would feed me like sneaky little pavetta rolls, or if my friends were down, we would like come in through the back door into the kitchen and she would give us like strawberries with melted chocolate or as much ice cream as I wanted, or a big slice of banoffee pie.
Oh, that's a dream. Banoffee pie.
I love banoffee. It has to be the right toffee and banana ratio, though.
When you weren't at the hotel, where could you go to get a bit of peace from your two, frankly, awful sounding brothers?
I had I still do have a very close relationship with my grandparents, my granny Monica, who I'm obviously named after, and my granddad Jim. And they were just very good to me. They were really good to me. I went to secondary school around the corner, so I would stay with them a few nights a week. And to be honest, they just absolutely spoiled me rotten. My granny Monica, just as a person, has so much patience. I've never met another human being that has patience for other people the way she does, and especially for children. And I think that she would have honestly sat and listened to me perform the phone book. Like perform the ingredients of a pop noodle. Like she was just so encouraging, and she was so encouraging and instilled me with a lot of confidence. And we would have watched a lot of old movies together, and she would have came to all my speech and drama shows, and we did Blood Brothers for Willie Russell, and her and my granddad came to see it every single night. Just so sweet. Yeah, the best grandparents ever.
Back then, if you went to your gran's and you walk in the kitchen and you open the cupboard, what's the treat that you go for? What does she get in for you that she knows you like?
It'd probably either be a dark chocolate walnut whoop or dark Kit Kats. But you'll always find in my gran and granda's house like random scraps of food places. And it's obviously from the generation that they're on. You know, you'll open their oven and there'll be like half a fried egg and a slice of bacon with two bites out of it and a wrinkly, wrinkly, tiny, scrawny spud that's been on that oven for 2 days. And you daren't throw it out in front of a granddad. Just love it. I really love it there. And for me, I think it was sort of a time in my life when I was really cementing what I wanted to do. And I was sort of able to delve into the interest there. My grandmother got the internet before my parents did. So that also came with like Sky TV, which obviously blew my fucking mind.
Oh my God. I mean, the fact that you could go over there and just be by yourself and not, was, you must have had quite a lot of freedom, I suppose.
A lot of freedom. You just, yeah, I was looking up drama schools and reading a lot and just the peace and quiet my granny and granddad's. It was just lovely. It was really, really lovely. And they would go to bed quite early and it was like, yeah, like sort of like being a wee adult on my own downstairs. Yeah. Turn the wee lamp on, watch my wee film.
So fancy.
I just love it. And have sticky buns. There was always, I don't know why, there's this real culture in Derry of sticky buns. We talk about it a lot, obviously, in Derry Gears, with the cream horns and stuff. And my grandparents were, yeah, big advocate for the sticky buns. So,
so there's not one specific Derry sticky bun. Sticky bun is a name for a lot of different types of buns that are sticky.
That are sticky. Mm-hmm.
What's your favourite one?
My favourite's probably an icing finger or a coconut icing finger, or I like a turnover too, to be fair, or a snowball, or I like them all.
Where like can you all. Get them?
No, that's the other mad thing about Derry that I couldn't believe when I moved to England. Everywhere sells sticky buns in Derry. Like, you could go to your local corner shop and in the morning up until about 2 o'clock in the day, they'll have these huge wooden slabs that are just like over the rest of the counters that they sit on top of everything else, and that will just be full of sticky buns. All the shops get the delivery for sticky buns in the morning, and you'll just see teenagers walking to school with their blazer pockets stuffed with buns. Mm.
When you're in secondary school, was acting and performing still the thing that you're the most interested in?
I really loved the escapism of performing and being somebody else. And I think as a really, really young child, I remember having all these, like, making up these wee stories and stuff in my head. And I had the most amazing drama teacher in my school. She just completely, like, blew my mind and sort of lifted the lid of that world off for me. And Miss McTague sort of helped me navigate how I was going to do that as a job.
And you'd started doing bits of acting, walking on stage at school by that point.
Yeah.
How did that feel?
Amazing. Mm. Yeah, amazing. Getting to perform Blood Brothers for Willie Russell, and I was playing Mickey, and I obviously just wore my Brothers Liverpool top and tied my hair back, but it was quite insecure, so I still wore lipstick. So I... Yeah. It was a drag Mickey from Blood Brothers, basically. But just had the most amazing feeling. It's like a high. It's like an adrenaline rush. I used to get it a lot more when I was younger and I was performing this sort of like utter, I mean, this might sound really wacky, but this sort of like utter body experience when you were so on it and you had that sort of connection between two actors where it was like this rush. It's like this huge high. I used to get it a lot more when I was younger. I don't get it that often. Now I only get it rarely. Sometimes I often worry, was I a better actor then? And I'm shit now. Is that why I don't get it as much? But I think it's the rush. It's the sort of, it's that buzz of it. And that sort of confirmed that for me then.
Did you have like a little gang at school?
Yeah, we...
What was it like?
It was lovely. And they're still all my best friends now. We all did art together, which best perk of doing A-level art is that you get to hang out in the art rooms. Half and scones from the canteen and loads of sweets and crisps and crap and vol-au-vents. We had a wild lot of vol-au-vents when we were teenagers.
Hang on. Vol-au-vents.
Mm.
That's, I mean, it's not a typical teenage dish, really.
It's
I mean, where were you getting them from?
Also, when the corner champs do sticky buns, they also do vol-au-vents.
Hang on, stop. This can't be right. I would have heard this before. Yeah. What's in the vol-au-vent?
A chicken vol-au-vent. Chicken vol-au-vent or a chicken and ham vol-au-vent. No, you would hard push to be a vegetarian and dairy.
So, right, if I was to go back to this art room, tell me the look.
So, most schools in Derry, for the girls, I don't know why, but when you're in sixth form, then you get a pinafore, not a skirt, which obviously I got mine taken up, so it was right up my arse, even though it wasn't... I don't know who I was doing that for. Like, I have the shorter the skirt, the better, always.
Oh, God, I did exactly the same. I used to walk about with my bum cheeks just showing.
Yeah, and absolute fanny grazer.
I was just honestly.
And then I would have been clattered in oil bars. Like from probably the first week in September, my uniform would have been permanently stained with oil bars and oil paint. And it just was always bogging. I was just always dirty. Like with like bum dust as well on me and stuff. like painting my hair, always greasy hair. Yeah, I was actually quite a stinking teenager.
I love the way that like ma culture is depicted in Derry Girls. It's one of the loveliest things about the show, the fact that the mothers are all kind of talking to each other. Mm-hmm. Did it reflect the experience you had growing up as a teen as well?
It was like all of our parents, my little group of friends, all of our parents were sort of in cahoots with each other. And they just caught us doing everything. Like, my mom got a breathalyzer when I was a teenager. I know. How lousy is that? Like,
that is sneaky.
Isn't it? Well, she actually bought a breathalyzer, I think, for herself. She wanted to make sure when she was driving the next day. And then I would say she was like, ding, ding, I've got you. But she used to collected me and my friends from an underage disco once, and she made us all line up outside the disco and blow under the breathalyzer. How embarrassing was that? Like,
that woman is a badass.
A badass. And then my other friend's mum did catch us underage drinking, though. We came in and she was like, seriously, let me smell your breath. And I thought I was an absolute criminal mastermind, so I decided to breathe through my nose. And I was just like, no Sharon. She was like, let me smell your breath now. And so I was just like, she's like, I'm stupid. And I shit myself and I'd done it again. And then she was like, seriously, spilled the whole beans. I saw, we were drinking, we were up in the Glenfield, Macker's bought us it, we smoked two bags each. And we stayed up all night crying, me and my friends upstairs about, she was like, that's it, I'm telling all your mothers tomorrow. We stayed up all night crying. I didn't sleep a wink. All me and my friends couldn't sleep. We were panicked that much. And then she obviously rang the parents first. And they were like winding us up to make us more scared. And she marched us into each one of our houses. And when she came down to my house with my mum was like, I'm so disappointed in all of these scares. These are liars and all the rest of it. And then we promised my mum that we would take the Pioneer's Pen.
What?
The Pioneer's Pen is like this Catholic, like, thing that you promise to abstain of, like, alcohol and sex and drugs for, like, I think the rest of your life. And we were like, we'll take the pen, Mum, we'll take the pen.
The Pioneer's
Pen. I think that's, if they're Catholics, I don't know if Protestants have pens too.
Feels like a big commitment.
That's a big commitment, like, it's a big commitment, but I was willing to go there. Obviously, it didn't last too long. Like, I was straight back at it the moment I got an opportunity.
Did she know when you were trying to sneak out to see boys?
Yeah. It was actually my granny that gave me the birds and the bees talk, though, and I'll never forget that. She gave me money leaving the house. Oh my God, I'm still embarrassed to tell the story. She gave me money when I was leaving her house one day, when I was on my way to see my first boyfriend, and she put the money in my hand and she was like, there was once a wee girl who lost her bus money and she never got it back again. And I was like, but I've got a purse, granny, don't worry about it. She's like, I'm not talking about your bus money. And I nearly died. Scary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
You didn't have a plan B when it came to being an actress. You went to Manchester to study drama. How was it being there as compared to what you dreamed of? I mean, you kept saying for years you'd been looking up drama schools on the internet and then what was it actually like?
To sort of have your entire day and week focused around it was unbelievable to me, and it was a very intense experience. It was 40 hours a week. Originally, I was meant to go to London, but just before it, my mum's best friend, who was sort of like an auntie to me, or even like a big sister, she just passed away quite suddenly before I went. So I got this real panic. I don't know why, that I didn't want to go to London. It was going to be too big, and then I wasn't going to go in at all. I was going to take a year out, and my mum basically pushed me out. She didn't want me to stay because I was upset or to be worried, and I was very determined on staying for a year. And then she then told me that I'll charge you £60 a week if you stay. So I was like, oh, fuck this. Anything to get me to go, though. And she done the right thing. You know, she really, really done the right thing. I needed to do that.
Yeah, it must have been horrible, though, because this horrible thing's happened. And then you arrive here. How did you cope?
And it was really soon afterwards. I don't think I'd grieved yet or I processed it. I think I was really still in this state of shell shock. So the first year, although I was excited and I didn't know anybody, you know, everybody was a stranger to me, and there was nobody from my school or anybody from Derry even that I knew in Manchester. So I think I was, in usual form, always Billy Big Bollocks, ringing home and saying, you know, I'm having a great time, it's amazing, I'm never coming back to Derry, it's so classy, you have to see the size of their Primark, it's huge, and all this. But actually, looking back on it, I was really depressed, actually. Really didn't go on much to university in my first year. I spent a lot of time in bed, eating, and then I would sleep all day long and then go out a couple of nights a week and I would just eat and sleep, and that was basically all I did. And looking back on it, I was really depressed and very, very anxious.
Did anything help you out at that sad time?
I think when we started, I think it was just time. I just needed time. I needed time, and I needed to settle in, and I needed to probably tell people what I was going through. I needed to get close enough to tell the friends around me what I was going through, and that changed everything for me. Female friendship, really. I had an amazing friend called Nefty, who I loved with in the first year, and she's the wonderful person, and she was a real adult when I met her. She was a brilliant cook, and she just had her shit together, and she was doing like biomed, and she was just like fully functioning woman, and I just had no, I couldn't manage life, and she was really, really helpful. And she was so, I mean, I just moved over from Derry as well, and she was from London. Like, she was cool. She knew stuff that I didn't know about. She would have cooked a lot of African dishes, so like jollof rice and Maggi chicken and goat curry. But she also would have made, carbonara was a favourite of mine, so she would have made that for me. Like, just really, really good to me. She was so good to me. And she would check to see if I'd went to university when she got back. Knock on the door, and she was just so kind. She's a wonderful person.
We all need a Nefty. What was the first thing you noticed about the food in England?
You know, it actually blew my mind, because we had no takeaways walking distance to us. And obviously our takeaways are like fish and chips, Chinese, one Indian. You know, like, dairy's a lot different now. It's kind of Thai and stuff now, and it's amazing. But when I was growing up, it was very much that. And I could not believe in England that you could get 6 chicken wings, chips, and a can of Coke for like £1.69. I was like, why the hell would anybody bother cooking dinner when they could get this lovely chicken and you can spice it up? All you need to do is get a different dip every night, and it's basically like a different dinner. So I used to get Dixie's chicken wings every single day. And the first time I came back from university, I was massive. I was actually so massive. And you don't get away with anything in our family. And my dad collected me from Belfast Airport and he was really looking at me going up the road like a good couple of times. And when we pulled up to the front of the house, my mum like opened the door with the dog in her hand and she was like, my Wayne's home. I really must see my dad. It was all I opened the fucking patio door so we fit her in the house.
Tell me about your first acting job out of drama school.
My first job was for this Sky TV show called The Five. And they obviously wanted English people. So I went down and just spoke to the casting director and the director in an English accent because I was like, oh my God, if they know I'm Irish, doesn't matter how good I am with the accent, they'll just never hire me. Got the part and then they...
Yeah, but... They think you're English.
They think I'm English. So you're, this point,
I mean, is there not a problem now that you're going to have to carry on doing the English accent?
When I get to set?
Yeah. But were you confident that you could go in and do it?
Oh, aye.
You knew you could do the accent?
Yeah.
What about everything else? Because you'd never been on a set before.
Never been on a set before. I was confident. I think I was always more nervous of people than I was of ever doing the job. I was nervous about meeting people and like... What if they don't like me? And all the things that you have when you're sort of that age and you're a lot younger, it's just... Yeah, I'm more nervous about that than actually doing the job, but I couldn't wait to get to set and sort of have that first experience. But yeah, obviously they wrote this part for me and I don't know, when I got there then, the director, I started speaking to him and he was like, oh my God, you're Irish. And I was like, yeah.
Surprise!
And we filmed one of the scenes and then he got in contact to say that the writer really loved my accent, my own accent, and they wanted me to do it in my own accent. And that was just such... a privilege to have that, because I never thought I would work on a Derry accent. And then obviously Derry Gears came along, so yeah, it was an amazing experience.
How did you hear about the potential of a part in Derry Girls?
I was in Manchester at times. I was living in London. I moved to London with my best friend and we had no money and we shared a bed in a studio flat in Stockwell because... At that point, when we were moving to London, we hadn't really ever been here before. So we just needed to be, I thought in my mind, walking distance to Covent Garden. I thought, well, I feel like you need to be walking distance to Covent Garden. So it was like an hour and 20 minute walk to Covent Garden. So I said, Jesus, that'll do the job. Where I'd rather share a bed for a year as long as I'm walking distance to Covent Garden, which was our thinking, which is fucking mad. And we shared the bed for the year in the studio and had the most amazing time and went to like a lot of drum and bass raves and got today text to go to the theatre and we're working in bars and I was auditioning loads and just having, I did Mice and May in the play and went on tour, having a lovely time, but I ran out of money. So I went back to Manchester for a year and I had like really bad jobs that I absolutely hated.
Hang on, you're in Stockwell.
Mm-hmm.
Which is nowhere near Covent Garden, in case you listen to
no.
this. Don't stay in Stockwell if you're hoping to catch them buskers at Covent Garden.
Yeah.
So you're in Stockwell. What are you eating at this point?
Oh my God. So me and Holly were trying to cook at that point and Cost Cutters, I'm sure you're not allowed to do this now, but Cost Cutters around the corner used to sell 2 bottles of wine for a fiver. So that was our main focus, obviously, Grace, was the wine, because we can afford to drink in bars. So we would just get like really pissed on like 2.50 bottles of wine.
Yeah.
And we would make a lot of chili con carnes.
Yeah.
All of Jamie Oliver's 15-minute recipes, we were well under them. Like, we were trying to be fancy on a very tight budget. On a very tight budget. So we would have carbonara, which we would make from scratch, because obviously I love carbonara.
Yeah.
Chili con carne. We would then save the chili con carne and put it in a sweet potato because we were trying to diet. Because we're actresses. We loads of cheese on top because at least I didn't have a real spud.
I heard that actually getting the part on Derry Girls is quite a long audition process. Mm-hmm. They keep having you back and back.
Yeah, we auditioned. I think the whole process, sort of time frame, was 6 months altogether. It was so nerve-wracking. I really, really, really wanted the part and I was just trying to do anything I could for it. I was going to Marks and Spencer's every day and I would buy a school uniform, a different version of a school uniform. Then I'd go to the audition in the full school uniform, and then I'd go back to Marks and Spencer's, get changed in their toilets, and then return the uniform. Do this every time I had an audition. And I must have looked mental when I was on that tube, because you can look 16 on TV, but like I was like standing smoking and all, and like going to all bar one afterwards with my friends and all, having quite pints in the school uniform turn on it.
The brass neck of taking that back to Marks and Spencer's.
Thank you very much. I've just sweated my absolute tits off on this. Thank you very much.
See you next week.
See you next week. But that's when you're from Derry, you do. People in Derry have such brass necks. You can see them shining from space.
Over three seasons, Derry Girls was a smash hit, not just in ratings, but it felt like fans really took you and your co-stars into their hearts. What impact did it have on you to experience that together?
Yes, I mean, it's very, like, I think we all know each other extremely well. We know each other very, in a very deep sense. The only comparison I think you could sort of draw to it, it's like a band.
Yeah.
You know, we were all so delighted to have got that job, and I have such huge respect for all of them. They're the most amazing actors I've ever worked with, and eventually they're just all so talented, and we all of our lives sort of changed overnight for the exact same reason, and that's a bond that none of our other family or friends will ever understand, that we'll always have with each other.
So this third series of Derry Girls is the last.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do anything to celebrate the end?
Yeah, we had a big screening in Derry, which was just so gorgeous, because now I would love to work again in my own accent, and I would love to bring screenings back to my hometown for the rest of my career, but I don't think I'll ever have an experience like that. My entire family was there. My grandparents got to come, and my granddad got papped with me, and it was just so lovely. It was just a day that I'll hold close to my heart, I think, forever.
Yeah.
So proud of the show, and just extremely proud of Lisa. Oh, it was very emotional on the last day of filming. I feel like I've grown up on this show. I started this 5 years ago in my early 20s, and a lot's changed for me now, and I feel like a very different person. I feel like I was a girl when I started, and I'm a woman now. But I just feel very different within myself, and it sort of coincides and runs parallel to playing that character of Erin. You know, Erin's changed to have a character for her to grow up so much throughout the storyline is quite amazing, and I think, yeah, we'll all keep in touch.
Is there a Derry Girls WhatsApp group with just the five of you in?
There is.
What's it called?
So we have one for just the five of us. Yeah. That's called the OGDGs.
OGDGs. Oh, that's what I wanted to know. Is Grandpa Joe on WhatsApp?
Grandpa Joe's not on WhatsApp. I just communicate with him privately, which is normally through voice notes, where I send him a voice note and he responds with a very well punctuated message that's sort of formulated like a letter, how someone would speak in a letter. He just gets this like mad frantic voice note back from me.
How do you move on to a new job after this?
I don't think I ever will. I don't think I ever will. I think that Erin will always stay with me, and that experience of Derry Years will stay with me. And I didn't just learn a lot about acting or the craft. I also learned a lot about where I'm from. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot about where I'm from, and having had spent that much time with Lisa and have that sort of shift in my career with Lisa, and also being another woman from Derry, I've sort of learned a lot about how to conduct myself in this industry. And it was a madly prolific personal job, I think, for all of us as well. And I think that just came with the nature of it being a huge success, when I don't think anybody would have expected that. And I remember Lisa saying, it's like the wee train that could. And yes, it really did. And I'm just so proud to be part of it.
How often have you eaten this comfort food since you wrapped?
I think I actually had this the next day after the screening, when I was hungover, and I had it a lot during the series because it was freezing. So I had it a lot then.
Saoirse, Monica Jackson. Thank you for comfort eating with me.
Oh, thank you. Oh, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you for having me in your lovely home. I'm buzzing.
This episode of Comfort Eating was produced by Emma Roberts. The series producer is Leia Green, and the executive producer is Kathy Drysdale. Music and sound design is by Axel Cacoutier, and this episode was mixed by Solomon King. If you like Comfort Eating, please leave us a review. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And use the hashtag ComfortEatingPod to get in touch about the podcast or share your own comfort foods.
This is The Guardian.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.